Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000, Capitalism and Equality.
Hello. I was amused last week when America's top baseball commissars ordered that Atlanta Braves pitcher John Rocker undergo psychiatric testing because he said he finds New York City a depressing place filled with queers and non-whites. What does that remind you of? What other country can you think of that within recent memory used to pack dissidents off to mental hospitals to silence them? What other regime claimed that anyone who deviated from the party line obviously must be crazy and needed treatment? I'm sure that the commissars of big baseball didn't see the humor in their response to John Rocker's frank comments. All they saw was someone who was rocking their gravy train and needed to be slapped down before he caused some gravy to be spilled. After all, baseball is big business. It's show business with its multi-million dollar celebrity contracts, its glitzy advertising, and its total dependence on television for bringing its product to the couch potatoes. The commissars of television were not happy with John Rocker's derogatory comments about their favorite city. And so the commissars of big baseball fell all over themselves, scrambling to show that they also were not happy. And they didn't even notice the irony in their choice of methods to show their unhappiness. Here we had big capitalists dealing with an ideological dissident in exactly the same way the big communists used to deal with one. First, make him publicly confess his guilt, and then either a bullet in the back of the head or compulsory psychiatric treatment. The aim, in both cases, of course, is to convince the public that it's a bad, bad thing to contradict the party line. Only crazy people do that. If you don't want everyone to think you're crazy, you'd better keep your toes right on the party line. That's the way good people behave. That's the way sane people behave. In other words, it's crazy not to like to ride the New York subways with AIDS-infected queers, black criminals, and welfare moms and their pickaninnies. It's crazy not to just love the glitzy, alien, decadent diversity of Times Square. In the last two broadcasts, we've talked about why the commissars are so afraid of dissent that they feel it's necessary to go to such lengths to discredit publicly anyone who dissents. Basically, it's because they understand that their gravy train depends on maintaining an illusion, and any dissent threatens that illusion. It's interesting to note that while the Jewish media bosses have their own specific reasons for maintaining the illusion, reasons which we discussed in earlier broadcasts, the Gentile capitalists of big baseball also have reasons. In the first place, they must keep the Jewish capitalists of television happy in order to assure the continuation of their lucrative collaboration. And in the second place, they don't like anyone who gets out of line, anyone who may change things in an unpredictable way, anyone who might be a threat to their profits. They want their employees to keep their mouths shut and do what they're told. In addition to their attitude toward dissidents, there are other similarities between the communist regime of the defunct Soviet Union and the Clintonista regime under which we live in the United States today. You know, there are several reasons why communism has failed so disastrously everywhere it has been imposed on white people, on Europeans. It may work with Asians or with Africans. It may work with mestizos, but it doesn't work with Europeans, with white people. One reason, of course, is that in Europe, It was originally promoted and implemented by Jews for the purpose of exploiting the people it purported to be helping. The Jews used communism to bleed one nation after another dry. Communism would have failed even under Aryan leadership, however, because it was based on a false view of human nature, at least on a false view of our nature, which is to say, it was based on egalitarianism, the notion that we are all basically the same, and on the idea that we all should work only for the common good, like bees in a hive, and not for ourselves. Egalitarianism is the most poisonously false and destructive myth ever foisted on our people, though it is contrary to even the most cursory observation of the real world. Egalitarianism has its destructive power in its appeal to the inferior, to the envious, and to the resentful. It says to the loser, to the sluggard, to the dull, the clumsy, and the drab, you are just as deserving as the winner. You are just as strong and agile, just as bright and creative, just as imaginative and energetic, just as brave and skillful, just as beautiful and admirable in every way. The only reason you are a loser and he is a winner is that you have been cheated and he has been given an unfair advantage. Charlatans and Jews have used this line over and over again to tear down Aryan societies. Whenever we have relaxed our vigilance and permitted the rabble to become too numerous, those who hate us have gone to the rabble and preached the same sermon, "The first shall be last, and the last shall be first." And the rabble have responded and helped the charlatans pull down their betters and destroy the society. That is the sermon the Jews preached to the rabble in Russia in order to incite them to destroy first the aristocrats, and then the professionals and the middle class, and finally the whole society. The rabble believed the Jews when the Jews told them that they were just as good as the aristocrats and the middle class, just as able and just as deserving. But of course, they weren't as good. And after they had helped the Jews murder their betters, Russian society didn't work as well as before. Things started running downhill. And what finally killed off the Soviet Union was the other underlying principle of communism, namely, that people should work only for the benefit of the hive, of the mob, not for their own benefit. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need, was what the Jewish apostle of communism, Karl Marx, preached. That appealed greatly to the losers, to those with much need and little ability. But it didn't do much to inspire those with ability to work harder. Output fell, and not even the threat of firing squads to punish so-called saboteurs and wreckers could make them work harder or more carefully or more creatively. Pilfering from one's workplace became the national pastime in the Soviet Union because bosses had no really strong incentive to prevent it. Since everything theoretically belonged to everyone, everyone felt no compunction about helping himself to what he wanted when the commissar was looking the other way. In the United States today, one still can work for oneself, and an able person still is permitted to succeed and to benefit from his own efforts despite all the efforts of the Clintonistas. The growing burden of taxes, and even worse, of government regulations and quotas and paperwork, has not succeeded in killing our ambition and our entrepreneurial spirit yet. But the Clintonistas still are working hard on it. Anyone in business for himself can feel their hatred, and their resentment. It is the egalitarianism which is killing us here. It is the insistence that we all are equal, regardless of race, color, creed, sex, sexual orientation, IQ, work habits, character, morality, accomplishment, you name it. And I don't mean just equal before the law, implying everyone deserves a fair trial and so on. The promoters of egalitarianism are insisting on sameness, especially across racial and sexual lines. For example, if more black drivers are being pulled over by the highway patrol, it must be that white cops are behaving in a racist way and deliberately targeting blacks. It can't be that blacks actually are committing more offenses because they are the same as whites in every way. So we have the current egalitarian pretense of indignation about the alleged offense of driving while black. And it's the same with black behavior in schools. The fact that blacks are suspended or expelled from school far more often than whites is prima facie evidence that white school officials are behaving in a racist manner because, as everyone knows, blacks behave the same as whites. And the fact that blacks don't perform as well on tests and are much more likely to flunk courses and fail bar examinations, again, is proof of institutional racism because, as we all know, blacks are just as smart as whites. They have the same intelligence, the same problem-solving ability, so that in the absence of racism, their performance will be the same as that of whites. And of course, crime statistics prove the same thing. The fact that blacks are convicted of murder 8 times more often than whites on a per capita basis shows that the criminal justice system is biased against blacks. That's what the egalitarians want us to believe. It couldn't be that blacks are different, that their brains are wired differently, and that they are predisposed to criminal behavior. And the fact that heterosexual black males are 14 times as likely as heterosexual white males to be HIV carriers just proves that the health care system also is biased against blacks. Certainly, it's not that blacks have any sort of biological predisposition to become infected with a virus. Oh my goodness, no. Homosexuals, according to the egalitarians, differ in no way from normal men, except in the things they do to each other in the privacy of their bedrooms. And since those things are none of our business and have no relationship to anything else they do, we should treat homosexuals just as if they were normal. The fact that the things homosexuals do in their bedrooms are only one facet of a homosexual personality syndrome is something we're not supposed to notice. We're not supposed to notice that homosexuals, in fact, are different in their behavior and attitudes from normal men, and that their homosexuality colors every aspect of their lives. We're supposed to believe that aside from what goes on in the bedroom, they're the same as normal men. This sameness is an article of faith with the egalitarians. If one questions it, one is asking to be forced to submit to psychiatric examination. The relevant aspect of all of this for us is that this is even more true in the capitalist society we have in America today than it was in the communist society of the Soviet Union. I say even more true because even though egalitarianism was the party line in the Soviet Union, fewer people there believed it. During the greater part of their reign, the communists didn't have television as a tool for controlling the public's thinking. They had the KGB, and so television wasn't quite as necessary for keeping people in line as it is in the United States. If you can make a man do what you want with the threat of a bullet, then it's not quite so important to twist his thinking into line with your propaganda. And the thing for us to note is that the big capitalists in the United States today are as much enforcers of egalitarianism as the Clintonistas are and as the communists in the Soviet Union were. It wasn't a bunch of communists or Clintonistas who ordered John Rocker to undergo psychiatric testing last week because he inadvertently let slip the fact that he doesn't believe in equality. It was a bunch of capitalists, baseball capitalists, showbiz capitalists. Baseball capitalists certainly aren't exceptional among capitalists in this regard. Pick up any slick magazine and look at the full-page advertisements for clothing, cars, cigarettes, and other consumer items. Racial mixing is more and more a theme of advertising these days. Mixed-race models, mulattoes, quadroons, and octoroons, some of them so light that it's hard to tell what race they are in big demand for ads. The Madison Avenue companies which design the ads are mostly Jewish, of course, but the big manufacturing corporations which pay for the ads are mostly Gentile. The big corporate bosses aren't forced to be egalitarians. No one needs to twist their arms. If egalitarianism is in, they want to be on the bandwagon. If it will sell, they want to be the ones selling it. And they couldn't care less that it's a communist idea. It's not that America's capitalists today are communists at heart. And it's certainly not that free enterprise is fundamentally rotten. It isn't. What's rotten is the breed of capitalists we have in America today. They didn't used to be such a rotten bunch. Henry Ford, one of America's great capitalists, was a man of principle who stood up to the Jews. And generally there was the conviction that success and wealth were achieved through hard work, self-discipline, and strong principles. Of course, nearly all of our capitalists before the Second World War were fervent anti-communists because they never did care much for the idea of sharing their wealth. They didn't care for the beehive principle of communism. But they also were not egalitarians. In fact, hardly anyone was, capitalist or not. 50 or 60 years ago, we all would have laughed at the notion that women should serve in submarine crews or share foxholes with men in combat, notions with which today's big capitalists are perfectly happy. Men certainly didn't look down on their women, but we knew that men and women weren't the same. We understood that their natural roles in our society were not the same, but were complementary. Of course, we wouldn't have laughed at the suggestion that black men should be permitted to sleep with white women, or that black drill instructors should be permitted to give orders to white women trainees, or that Hollywood films should portray white women and black men in romantic or sexual relationships. We would have strung up the promoters of such destructive filth. And the big capitalists then didn't really disagree with us on these things. Certainly they would not have suggested that someone who said he didn't like riding next to diseased queers or black criminals on the subway needed a psychiatric examination. What all of this leads us to is the conclusion that capitalists, like the rest of us, have declined morally during the 20th century. About all we can say in their favor today is that they are not fundamentally malevolent as the Clintonistas are. The big capitalists are not really seeking the destruction of our race or our civilization, but they're perfectly willing to see it happen if it will lead to greater profits for them in the short run. In that sense, they're better than the communists and the Clintonistas, but that's not really saying much for them. Capitalists, of course, like the rest of us, can be deceived. They can be brainwashed by Jewish propaganda. But that's not the primary reason most of them are behaving so badly these days. They are smarter than the average person, at least the big capitalists. The most successful capitalists are smarter and more perceptive than the average couch potato. They're not as easily fooled. The ones I have known who go along with the Jews don't do so because they've been fooled. Actually, in private, they're a pretty cynical bunch. What they lack is not intelligence, not understanding, but principles, a moral sense. Really, all they care about is themselves and their profits. In a society without Jews, a society without the sort of destructive television propaganda which bombards us every day, big capitalists could play a constructive role. Aim them in the right direction, and their energy, ambition, and intelligence can accomplish a great deal. But the way they are aimed now, they aren't much better than the Clintonistas. In other words, George Bush Jr. may not lead America to hell with quite the same speed and enthusiasm as Al Gore would. But under Bush, hell would remain our ultimate destination just as surely. We really need two things to restore America to health. We need to break the Jews' influence on the public. We need to take all of their propaganda media away from them, and we need to have principled leadership, which is something we haven't had for a long, long time. The reaction of the mass media to John Rocker's frank comments about New York shows us the first part of the problem. The decision of the baseball capitalists to order Rocker to have psychiatric testing shows us the second part. Dealing with the first part of the problem is our easier task, though it is hard enough. Even now, we are reaching a small but significant portion of white America. We aren't reaching the couch potatoes, of course. Television is required for that. But with your support, we are beginning to make a small difference in the thinking of independent-minded Americans. The leadership stratum is becoming aware that the feelings and thoughts we represent must be taken into account. As we keep on pushing, keep on reaching more and more Americans with our message, we will force at least some of America's non-Jewish leaders to begin making new calculations about what is in their best interests. And let us remember that that is all that matters to them, their own interests. They collaborate with the Jews now, but they will turn against the Jews without a moment's hesitation when they have been convinced that collaboration is no longer in their best interests. Understanding that certainly gives us encouragement to persevere. Ultimately, however, we do need more. We do need to have principled leadership, moral leadership. That may require a fundamental restructuring of our society. In fact, I am convinced that it will. That's what the National Alliance is working for in the long run. Not just getting rid of the Jews and their influence, but giving direction to our people under principled leadership. And you can help us with that difficult but essential task. Thanks for being with me again today.